Coming up next on Two Cops, One Donut.
How did you mold over to the Mike the Cop stuff on social media? Because at the time, cops weren't on that.
No. I really don't know of any other than Officer Daniels was doing Vine for sure before. But I thought he was just an actor. Like right. when I first actually talked to him, I was like, "No, you're not a real cop, right?" He's like, "No, I am." And I'm like, "No way.
No,
I don't you can't be on the internet. You can't do that."
You're right.
And I had started writing. I actually got started blogging first, faceless, you know, just okay. I was just going under the pseudonym Mike the Cop as a blogger and wrote a few articles. I started something. I had a website, Cop Life is what the website was, and started a Facebook group, and that was growing. And all it was just, I don't know, pro police, smoking and joking, having a good time. You know, I really wasn't a Facebook guru or anything. I barely had done anything on the internet at all other than have a Facebook, you know.
All right, welcome back. Eric Levine, Two Cops, One Donut, and my special guest today is one of my OG social media favorites, somebody that I've been wanting to get on the show for a while, but just considered him untouchable. He's one of those. Mike, the Cop Edwards. How you doing, brother?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. I put you way up on that pedestal.
I gave you like this amazing background here for the show. I got this terrible yellow lighting giving me a tomato face and this beautiful, look at your setup compared to mine. It's just crazy.
Basically, this was my man cave, and then I added a table and called it a podcast room. So
there you go.
I had a beanbag chair in here, and I played all the video games and watched all the Star Wars movies and stuff, and then came up with the idea for the podcast and kind of rolled with it. So it does look nice, but in the background, like, this is way more cramped than it really looks. I know how it is. I tell people, I'm like, man, listen, because I'll have guests come over, and I'm like, all right, it's just you and me. Like, if you bring an extra person, just let them know that they have no room, because I have cameras set up. Well, there's no room for them to move, so don't bring people.
Like, right.
I can get two guests at most, and even that is a little cramped, and if it's a summertime here in Texas, it gets hot. Because this is my garage, so we repurposed the garage. So don't worry, I'm slowly, you know, been doing this 3 years now. I want to get one of those AC units. I don't know what they call them.
Mini splits.
Mini splits. Yes, that's the word. Yeah, I want a mini split. Because <So, laughs> right now this is all I got. This is a little mini fan.
It should be all right in January.
Yeah, that's true. And I hear that we're getting a very large winter front coming towards us next week that's supposed to be like negative 30. So these Texans are going to lose their mind.
We're up here in Michigan, man, we've been like living our best spring winter ever. This is nothing. Like, I think we might get some snow tonight or something, but I mean, it's been in the 40s and 50s all winter long. So I'm like, I'll take this.
Now, you were born and raised in Michigan, right?
No, I was born in Missouri. Then lived as a baby in Texas for a little bit in Wichita Falls. Is that in Texas?
Yes.
Yeah. In Texas somewhere. And then from like age 6 months to 5 years, I was in Illinois in Champaign, Urbana area. And then came back to where my parents grew up and been here since.
Okay. So you, the primary part of your life has been in Michigan.
Yep.
Okay. So I'm not sure exactly how old you are. I'm about to turn 41, but
I'm about to turn 48.
Okay. So in Michigan growing up, it would be nothing. And I grew up in Flint. So it's not like I grew up in the UP, Upper Peninsula, for those that don't know, but it wasn't like growing up there where they'll get 6-12 feet in a night and it's not a big thing. Like, but in Flint, we would get 3 to 5 feet like regularly every winter. Like, you could count on it. It was a normal thing. And then something happened. I don't know when the switch happened, but it's almost like Michigan just doesn't get the snow anymore, or the cold that we used to get. I don't know what's going on. Everything's flipping.
Bring it. Bring on the global warming. It's fine by me.
I know. Yeah, exactly. When I first moved down to Texas, my first winter, it never dipped below 40. And I was like, this is amazing. This is the best winter I've ever had in my life. And then now something's happening. The magnetic poles are changing or
something. A little thin layer of black ice around Texas is going to shut the whole state down, you know?
Yeah. My lieutenant, so they had this gigantic accident. Hundreds of cars. It was all over national news. Well, he was in it, and he got just pig-piled by like 3 semi trucks, all this stuff.
Oof.
And it sheared like the top. I mean, when you look at the picture of his truck, you're like, I can't believe he made it, dude. I can't believe he made it. So now if there's even a hint that it is going to be ice, he stays home.
I remember, you're at least you're aware of who Officer Daniels is, right?
Yes.
So me and him got to Texas one time for, I don't even remember what we were doing, but we get to the airport and then hit the expressway, and it's raining with like normal rain, and everyone on the freaking expressway has their hazards on. Yeah. Like, I'm like, what is, everybody's going like 30 miles an hour and they have their hazards on. And I'm just like, did we miss something? Is there like a national, is there like an alien invasion happening? What is going on? This is just rain. Like, just drive in it, man.
Yeah. They do not do inclement weather down here on the roads, especially if there's snow and ice, it cripples this whole state. It's unreal. And then they brought down, so we had this really bad ice storm, and they kicked out their head of TxDOT, and they hired this guy from Minnesota. And I was like, okay, let's get somebody who knows what the hell they're doing. And he hasn't had a challenge yet. Nothing's, we haven't had anything bad since he started. So,
well,
I'm waiting.
I watched this weather dude on YouTube, Ryan Hall, y'all. I don't know if you watch him or not, or ever heard of him.
I haven't.
And he's got to make, him and a few other guys got to make like regular weathermen like absolutely hate their lives, because regular weathermen are making 87 grand a year to wake up at 3 a.m, go to the studio, do all this stuff. And Ryan's in his like house just making weather videos, you know, with meteorological knowledge, probably making like, you know, millions. $250,000 a year on YouTube, like at his house, and they just gotta hate him. But he's really solid to watch, and he's got some quite a bunch of weather's gonna hit Texas and east and the south, and
yeah,
it's gonna be interesting.
Yeah. Huh? I'll have to take a look at him. But for those listening, when you get to this point, I normally say this at the beginning. What we're gonna hit today is we're gonna talk about Mike's past being a police officer. Kind of what got him there and stuff like that. But the main point I really want to hit is his influence on social media. He's kind of one of the people that sparked cops having the balls to get on social media to begin with. And I'm one of them in a way. I had to watch a lot of his videos, a lot of other people's videos, to figure out what they were doing to stay under the radar at work and not hit GO problems, general orders, standard operating procedure issues, to get fired. Because there's a lot of cops that just decided to go balls to the wall, TikTok cop style, and they didn't last long.
I don't claim TikTok cops, man. I don't. That's not.
Oh, I got anti-TikTok cop on the docket here, sir. So we're going to mention that.
Yeah. Guys, tell them I said hi.
Well, I see you on there commenting every once in a while. I love it. So I only just recently discovered them. So
yeah, I don't usually go as hard in the paint, you know, on someone. I just try to make sarcastic, funny comments because it's quite entertaining to me. But we can talk about this when the time's right. But I just think like what a lot of what is going on right now is different. Not that I never made anything cringeworthy or whatever, you know, somebody could criticize me rightly probably on a lot of things, but it's different. It's different in the reasoning behind why they're doing what they're doing, I think. And the content's different, but that's, you know, maybe neither here nor there.
Yeah. We'll get into it. Cause I lean towards anti-TikTok cop guys myself. And I also, I told him, I was like, listen, if I do anything that you think is worthy of being on your page, by all means, you have my blessing, because I'm dumb enough. Like, I should have known better. Like, sometimes you just don't realize how you come across, and like, but luckily I haven't made their list yet. So we'll get to that. But I want to show people, for those that aren't totally familiar with Mike the Copper, maybe you are, and you're like, God, I just can't put my finger on where I know this guy from. Well, I'm going to play one of his videos. I really like this recruiting video. So here's just a part of Mike's sense
of humor. Hey, Mike, Lieutenant Smith down here at the PD. Just wanted to bring you up to speed on your application for police officer. We've narrowed it down to 738 other applicants, but congrats, you're moving on to the background phase. It'll take about 9 months, you know, could be a little bit longer. I did want to bring up one issue that we noted on your packet. Said you had a perfect attendance certificate in second grade, but an initial look at that showed that you did have a half-day absence for a dentist appointment that year. So got to do a little bit of digging there. We're going to meet with your old principal at Pine Valley Retirement Center and just cover that with her, make sure everything's squared away. Pretty standard stuff, really. Hey, Mike, Lieutenant Friendly down here at the PD. Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on your interest card that you dropped off in the box at the community college. Yeah, we'd like to offer you the position of police officer. No formal education or application is necessary. Just come on in. We do the academy just, you know, down the road for marijuana use. That's what they make breaks and lunches for. Just make it a mild strain. Arrested? Any felonies? Did anybody die? Okay, cool. Come on in. Hey, Mike, Lieutenant Smith down here at the PD. Just wanted to bring you up to
speed. Love it. Oh, shit. Dude, that hits so true, especially now. It took me in 2012 coming down to Texas. Now, I was a cop up in Saginaw, Michigan, but it took a year. It took a year for that process.
Yeah.
And that was with my dad on the same department. And still, I was military. I was already a cop. It was still a lengthy process.
Yeah. When I was going through the academy,
Peregrine's data integration platform is revolutionizing the way law enforcement agencies engage with their data, making it easily accessible and immediately actionable for those who need it when they need it most. When you're in leadership, investigations, analysis, patrol, or dispatch, Peregrine makes it easy for you to ask questions of your data, get quick answers, and make informed decisions. Law enforcement agencies across the U.S. are leveraging Peregrine to unify and maximize their data to improve decision-making, optimize workforce efficiency, and keep officers and their communities safe. If you're ready to start making better, faster decisions by leveraging your department's data, then visit Peregrine.io. That's Peregrine.io. And tell them Two Cops, One Donut sent you.
The amount of departments I had applied to was like a lot. And every time I would go take a civil service test or whatever, it was usually hundreds of people. And it was only for one or two spots. And it was highly competitive. So a lot of people were not getting hired back then. That was 2009, late 2008, early 2009, when I was like starting this whole process. So yeah, it's wild. And now you look today and
I wouldn't be a cop.
Today. I was just talking to a guy I worked the road with before. You know, he's a boss now, and we're just commenting yesterday on the quality control or lack thereof at this point, simply on the need to have bodies, you know, like,
yeah,
it's not great out there.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So speaking of when you got started, sir, what exactly was it that got you into law enforcement? Did you have family in the field? Did you have some traumatic experience? You're like, I gotta be a cop, make a difference.
No feel good story in terms of, you know, truth, justice in the American way or anything. It's just, I had some family in the law enforcement or public safety realm. And it was always one of those things that I wanted to do, you know, like a lot of kids do. They look up to cops, think it's cool. Then I had a loss prevention gig at Meijer. You'll know what Meijer is. Everybody outside of like five states would be like, what? It's like, think about a step up from Walmart for the Midwest.
Yeah. Not quite basically. Target, but
yeah, not Target, not yeah. Target, but not Walmart. Yeah. And only in like five or six states.
Has a Timmy Hose inside, not Starbucks.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, then Timmy Hoes, did people in Texas know what that is? I don't even think
they don't. Yeah. They don't.
So anyway, I got to know some police officers then, because I just did that as a gig in college, like in the 90s. So I was working there catching shoplifters or whatever. And, you know, every time we caught them, we'd call the cops and all that stuff. So I got to know police officers in my area. And then I went to college and had a, had some, like, I don't know what you'd call it, like work experience at the dormitories or whatever. And so I got to know a couple of the cops there that were on campus. And the way I went to University of Detroit, so their campus police are actually like sworn Detroit cops. That's like that at there in Wayne State.
Was it like blood in, blood out to get into that college?
Yes.
That's what I figured.
And so I'd always just had a great experience getting to know cops in those environments. And I was thought, man, it'd be pretty cool. And I was like a pre-med guy. Like I started college like going down that. Yeah. I mean, but I realized after a year and I was way too stupid for that. I got like a D in genetics and I was like, okay, this is just not
something your dad probably already knew down like before you even got started.
Yeah.
Like, he just going to crush him,
string me along.
Let him figure it out.
And I was like, well, what do I like to do? I'm like, I like to argue with people. So I was a philosophy major. So I just read and argued, you know, that's what I did.
Okay.
So that was my life. Anyway, so I started a family really young. Like I got married at 19 and my first kid by age 21. And so like I was growing a family. I was an entrepreneur type person and had worked different jobs, had different businesses. And then one of that was a window washing company. And when the crash happened in 2008, I lost like, I had one employee and we started losing a lot of like big contracts. And I'm like, man, this is making me tighten the belt more than I want. Now is probably a good time if I'm going to be a cop to go ahead and do it. My brother was a police officer. He had also had that same like loss prevention gig at Meijer in a different experience, but he had gone on, went to Detroit and then had transferred out to another department and, he loved it. And I'm like, man, if he loves it, I would probably love it. Good, steady paycheck, an opportunity to go do something that I've always wanted to do. I think it would fit my personality and my skill set. And, so I dove in and I was
like, did you plan on doing that as a career? Like, I'm doing this retiring. I'm not going to chase after the entrepreneurial stuff, or was it?
I mean, I think there's always a side hustle in me, like forever. I love marketing and I love business. So it's just it's an interest of mine, if nothing else. So I would always dabble in that no matter what. But yeah, I had, as far as the policing goes, my intention was to start at age 33, do 25 years, and retire at age 58. that was the original plan.
Gotcha. Okay. And so now, today, are you still an active police officer?
No. Nope. No, I got out.
Reserve?
Nope. None of
that. You let it all go.
Let it all go, man. I walked away. I had transitioned from full-time in the summer of 2017 to part-time, and I worked at a couple different departments just keeping my cert, and I enjoyed it. You know, I enjoyed being a little weekend warrior at times and still doing the job, and it kind of kept me sharp, and, you know, obviously it was also sort of like an ejection seat plan. If I needed to go back full-time, I could, you know, that kind of a thing. But in the COVID times, it just became apparent that was my time to be done, because you weren't going to catch me wearing a mask on duty or enforcing mandates. It wasn't, it just wasn't for me. That was a line that I'm grateful, you know, in hindsight, that I wasn't fully dependent upon that job and didn't have to make a tough decision. For me to walk away from my part-time gig was literally just like, hey, I'm coming in and turning in my stuff. Like I was not attached to it financially whatsoever. Like I got paid, but I'm saying like, I didn't need that. So if I wouldn't have done that and all my eggs were in that basket and that's what I had to depend on, I would have been in a very, very, very difficult circumstance because I know for a fact the department that I worked for, I would have had an ideological confrontation there, and it wouldn't have ended in my favor. So
yeah, and down here in Texas, we were looking at some of these other states. I'm like, what you guys are gonna do? What? Like, Texas is still very much we're 5 seconds away from leaving the United States and just being our own country.
Yeah.
Like, mentality all the time. And then you're gonna try to mandate people and then try to get cops to enforce something that isn't enforceable. I mean, constitutional wise. Like, yeah. That was a big deal. That was a stepping stone, I think, for a lot of cops.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yep, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it wasn't really a test for us where I'm at.
Yeah.
But I remember sitting there going, that, you know, you play the what if game. What if they tell us we have to do this? Like, I'm going to tell them fuck off.
Yeah.
Consequently, I go back in the military, I guess. So
yeah,
I'm still in the reserve. So that's my ejection seat. Just go full time.
Yeah. How long do they let you stay in the reserves? Do they age you out?
I don't know, really. Honestly, I'm in a weird reserve unit. I'm not in a traditional reserve unit. I'm in the IMA reserves.
I don't know. I'm not sure what that is.
So a traditional reserve unit, it's all reservists, and they do their 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks out of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you go to work, it's like, you know, you're seeing Frank, Bob, Sarah, and they're all professionals in whatever their career is, and they get to play warrior for the weekend. In the IMA reserves, you're attached to an active duty unit.
So
these guys are 365, 24/7. They're doing the job, the mission. They're full-time enlisted people. And when I go there, I'm like a supplement. I'm like an extra body for them. So I show up. They really don't give a shit about me anyway because I'm a weekend warrior in their eyes. So my primary function is to backfill if they get deployed, if they lose a bunch of bodies, you know, due to COVID or whatever it is. I go in and backfill and help supplement the job. So, and I'm a cop also in the Air Force. So it's kind of easy for me. I just show up and do what I always do anyway.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, laws are a little different, but nothing I ever have to worry about. So the aging thing, I'm not sure. I do know that as long as I continue to rank up and stuff, it shouldn't be an issue. As long as I'm passing everything, they don't really care. So
sweet.
Is what it is. I mean, I know guys that are damn near 60 that are still doing it. But
like, would they let me go to boot camp and join the reserves at age 48?
Not now. No, you have to have been in. Like, you got to get in at the limit.
Not that I want to do that. Don't get me right.
Yeah.
I don't.
But let's say the cutoff was 45 to get into basic, and so you go to your boot camp, then you'd be good. I'm not sure what the limit is. I really think it's like 38. But, it's rough. It's the older you get, the rougher it is. I'm in the transition now where the PT test is actually easier for me. Because I'm going to be 41. I've still stayed pretty fit, you know. And so when I get there, I'm like, man, this isn't as bad as it was last time. They're like, because you're lowered, old, but you stayed in shape.
You only need to do 12 push-ups in 90 seconds.
Yeah. Can I do it for my knees? They did. And it's
equal,
the Air Force.
Equal rights,
so.
Baby.
Yeah, that's right. So interesting. So you walked away. But what I want to get to is while you were in, when you did police work, what was your initial goal? Like, you're like, all right, I'm going to be a cop in this, because we all had it. Like, when I got there, I was like, I'm going to be a ticket writing machine. And then I get there and realize that I hated writing tickets. And I thought it was like one of the most like non-cop things you could do.
Yeah.
And like, it just changed my view, because I was in a big city and I'm handling actual police work, you know, domestics and robberies and thefts and all this stuff. And I'm like, all right, this is, like, I'm helping people. I'm tracking stuff down. I'm doing investigative work versus, oh, you went 5 miles over that posted speed limit, so I'm going to pull you over and write a ticket.
Right.
So what was your idea of law enforcement when you were getting in?
Well, my goal was that I definitely wanted to do investigations, and I definitely wanted to do like some detached tactical work or units or something like that. That was the goal of which I
to be a SWAT dude
of. No, I never wanted to do SWAT. No, I wanted to do like a FBI task force or DEA task force or narcotics unit, that kind of a thing. Never, I don't even really know why. I don't know the answer to the question as to why I would never want to be on SWAT, but it doesn't appeal to me at all, actually. But something in investigative wise. But yeah, that was the goal.
Okay. So that's what you were looking out for. But then when you got into it, what was your primary duties for the most part?
Well, I started in patrol, obviously. And then I actually ended up getting laid off like about 3 years in. And so that kind of gave me a forced reset. So when I went to my new department, everything there, I mean, they treated me good. You know, they didn't treat me like a complete FNG. It was like they respected the fact that I had some experience coming in. You know, I started to go through FTO again and all that stuff. And then the reality was that for there, and they had good opportunities for special units and things, but you had to have 3 years there at that department before you could qualify for it. And then the DB was by seniority. So I was kind of stuck, right? Like, I'm like, man, I've got at least 3 years until I could do that. And then unfortunately for me, for my goals, right, the DB is by seniority. So that was like way off. And then all of the special units, whether it was canine, narcotics, FBI, DEA, any of the task force stuff, all of that was filled like close to my three, like seemed like between my 2 and 3 year mark. And so those came off the table for being like right within most of my reach. So there was one that was going to be the closest, and that was the DEA. So I tried to kind of navigate my patrol career the best I could by requesting, you know, the appropriate training. So I did interdiction training and was up on the expressway when I could and on surface streets, but doing interdiction and trying to get dope and guns and warrants and all the good stuff. Every chance I got to be a roller, so a marked unit for any kicking doors or side investigations or uniform presence, I jumped on it. You know, I was volunteering and I did that for a while, getting, you know, calling dogs all the time and getting the job done, trying anyway. I tried to set myself up the best I possibly could. So then when that, in that time frame, probably when I was like hitting maybe around 7 years total, I did FTO school and went down that route, started doing some FTOing. And then the opportunity came up for the DEA thing. It's a much longer story, but I didn't get it. So that, the moral of the story is I wasn't selected. So I was left with at least another 4 years in patrol. And I'm definitely like the kind of personality, like I said, I'm like at that entrepreneurial itch. I need a change, right? So it was nice, like years sort of like 0 through 5, you know, that I start getting that itch. So then I do interdiction. Okay, cool. I learn a new skill. I'm out there doing something kind of new and different. And then I'm going to do training. Well, that's cool. Like now I learn how to kind of like, how do I coach people? How do I train people? All this stuff. So that was kind of cool. And then I was ready for like this next thing. And it was kind of like, you know, I mean, you're from Saginaw, so you know what a busy call load is and all that stuff. So like, I've been busy for 8 years in policing now, 8.5 years. Like, I need new challenges. I need a new angle. I need a fresh way to challenge myself here. So it just didn't happen. And that's like at the same time, this whole like sort of like unexpected Mike the Cop thing had been going on. And that just created an opportunity for me to go try something else and kind of like risk-free, because I could take a year from my department and come back sort of like no questions asked. I would lose my seniority, but I could come back to a job, like keep my pay, all that stuff. Like I just lose my seniority for like vacation picks and stuff. So I'm like, I really don't have anything to lose to take advantage of these opportunities that are in front of me. And that's when I did that.
So people, they hear you say that you got laid off as a cop. It doesn't, down here in Texas, that's not a thing. They don't understand that. So people listening are like, how the fuck did he get laid off? Listen, especially early 2000s to, I would say, shoot, it may still be going on. I don't know. I'm kind of out of the loop in Michigan, but they wouldn't hire cops full time. They would hire you part time. And then you get hired at another department. This isn't at all places, but I had several family members that they were working at two different departments because the departments didn't have funding and they didn't want to give benefits, you know, to people that if they didn't have to. So that was a workaround to they'd limit you. So you were under 40 hours, but then they didn't have to give you the benefits and all that's the perks. So that was a big thing in Michigan. And then when Pontiac went completely under and they lost their entire department, that's when I got out. I was like, I saw the writing on the wall. I was like, oh, shoot, if that can happen there, it can happen anywhere. And so,
yeah, my buddy was in Pontiac when that happened. So, yeah, it's interesting. My layoff situation was just corrupt local government.
Really?
Yeah. I got hired on a cops grant, and there was supposed to be a cops grant for four officers, and I was first on that list. So I got hired, and then the union president was like, you know, that like basically told me, don't get too comfortable. Like, they've already spent that money. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah. So, you know, naive, brand new cop me. But I was, you know, like I said, I'm in my early 30s. I had a family. I wasn't like your typical rookie. Like, I was a grown man. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I'll go knock on the door and talk to the chief. Like, it didn't matter. Like,
yeah.
Hey, man, like, my livelihood's here. Like,
yeah. So don't fuck with my life.
I'm hearing that this money's already spent. No. The way the grant works is, you know, we have to hire you and guarantee you at least 3 years. And that then we get the money because it's a 4-year grant and four officers, whatever he was like saying. I mean, it was a complete and utter lie. You know, it was true that there was a grant, but it was also true that the city had already committed funds, and it was a giant shell game, basically. And ironically, the reason we were laid off, and it was like 13 of us. I mean, it was a deep cut in the department. And because it went like 10 years deep, guys had a lot of seniority that got laid off. And ironically, it was to build a brand new public safety facility that was like millions over budget. And so, you know, it was ironic because I had to go back for like depositions or something on cases later. And I'm like, walking in, I'm like, we had stuff from like the 1950 lockers, you know, like it was like terrible. I mean, it was workable, but you know, it wasn't flashy by any means. And then now it's like these high end foot lockers where your boots can fit bottom to top on the boot, you know, like
right,
nice, got a place like ceramic showers, stuff. Like yeah, it's like I jokingly told the guy that I told never call me again to hire me back. Even because I would never want to work for a liar again. And turns out they didn't call me back. They called others. But when you write a letter and tell them not to call you, I guess that's what you can expect. I said, hey, you should name this bathroom after me. It's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, well, I mean, you laid me off so that you could have money to build this bathroom. You should at least name it after me, you know?
Right, yeah.
So
every time you take a shit, I want you to think of this face.
Yeah, so everybody went their ways. You know, some people did go back. They got a call back, you know, months later, and they went back. And other people went on to different employment in different agencies. And I was one of those, and kind of worked out because I was closer to home and, you know.
Yeah, Michigan is a weird place to be a cop. You hit some cities and counties that they've been solid and steady since their inception. And then you go to other places, and all they know is what I don't know what's going to happen next week. I could be gone, and they thrive in that. I couldn't do it. I need stability.
I agree. So,
but okay, so you get going. Sounds like narc was kind of your forte, going towards dope and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I had a knack for that, and I liked warrants as well. I like hunting people. You know, get the warrant book, find people. Now, I'm not talking about like expired license warrants. I'm talking about like people who, you know, robbed places or who, you know, beat their spouses and skip out on their court and, you know, stuff like that. Like I enjoyed going to find those individuals and and bringing them back to jail. I really enjoyed that. So
yes, that is a
real
good
police
time.
Work. You know, real police work is what I enjoy doing. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. You have
if
real
I'm
victims.
if I'm pulling you over, it's because I want in the car. It's not because I care that you were turning without your blinker. You know what I'm saying?
Right. 100 feet prior. Yeah. Whatever little excuse you can find.
Yeah.
Because you know there's something there.
I mean, I would tell you like really cheese dick. Like, oh, your license plate lights out.
Like, they'll be like,
really? Yes, really. You know.
I'll step out of the car.
So now we'll take it from there.
Yeah. Where's your license? Oh, weird. You got a warrant. Cool. Now let me look in this car and see what I can get. Beautiful. Yeah, it's, I try to have that conversation with newer officers. I'm like, listen, you got to understand what it is that you're looking to get out of. So now that I'm a sergeant, I just made sergeant in October, and I've, you know, I like teaching. Obviously I do this podcast because I kind of wanted to be a teaching thing. I was an academy instructor for 3 years, taught in jujitsu. You and I have that in common.
Nice.
I rolled, and when you get to blue belt, the instructors start using you to start working with the white belts and stuff. I was like, you know what? I kind of like doing this. I'm teaching them stupid stuff because I think I know more than I really do at the time, like all blue belts think. And so, but it was fun, and it kind of gave me that niche or that itch to scratch for teaching. And I didn't know I had that in me. And so now with these newer officers, I'm like, you got to look at the bigger picture. Like, what is it that you're trying to get? Are you trying to help real victims, or are you trying to help the city make money? Are you trying, which there's nothing wrong with that. If that's what you're into, traffic tickets get you into cars too. But, it just depends on what your goals are, and trying to figure that stuff out sooner than later, then it helps me as a supervisor get you going down that path.
Yeah.
Because now with 18 years of law enforcement under my belt, you want to be a narc? Cool. Now I'll start helping you and teaching you, because I've done a little bit of it all. When I first got down here to Texas, that was kind of my thing too. I was like, I want to set up on these dope houses, and I want to watch and learn and see how these narc guys that are, our actual narc unit was doing this. And so they're like, first thing you do, just watch a dope house. We'll tell you which ones to watch. So I would do that. Go watch a dope house. Car gets there, leaves 5 minutes later, if that, take off, find a traffic stop, figure out how to start working your verbiage to get into the car. And then you're like, oh, okay, I see why this is fun. Because now it's a puzzle. It's just like you said, you're hunting, and now you got to figure out the right wordage to get there. So it's that brain game. And,
yeah.
It was fun for me, but I got a little bit into everything. So I like teaching these new guys that stuff and having that in mind when they first get to my team, so I can help start guiding them in that direction. But with you doing that, I'm curious, how did you mold over to the Mike the Cop stuff on social media? Because at the time, cops weren't on that.
No, I really don't know of any other than Officer Daniels was doing Vine for sure before, but I thought he was just an actor. Like when I first actually talked to him, I was like, "No, you're not a real cop, right?" He's like, "No, I am." And I'm like, "No way.
No,
you can't be on the internet. You can't do that."
You're right.
And I had started writing. I actually got started blogging first. Faceless, you know, just okay. I was just going under the pseudonym Mike the Cop as a blogger, and wrote a few articles. I started something. I had a website, Cop Life is what the website was, and started a Facebook group, and that was growing. And all it was just, I don't know, pro police, smoking and joking, having a good time. You know, I really wasn't a Facebook guru or anything. I barely had done anything on the internet at all, other than have a Facebook, you know? Mm-hmm. And that led me to cross paths with a cop's wife from Texas, actually. And she was writing as well. She had written like a really popular piece called Dear Officer. And so we crossed paths. We started connecting, sharing each other's stuff. And then that became ultimately Humanizing the Badge. We like merged our Facebook groups and turned it into one big thing. Well, then that was our main thing, was writing. We didn't show our faces really. Like it wasn't that. We managed the group and it was growing. We're like, what can we do that's good for the law enforcement community? I mean, like, we had no idea. We're like, we could sell t-shirts and like give proceeds to cops with sick kids. Like, what are we going to do? You know, like, what are we going to do with this audience, you know, that's growing? And in the process, we had put together a series of things that we wrote and put it into a coffee table book. And we were like, how can we draw more attention to our organization, to this Humanizing the Badge thing? And we were sitting in Dallas, actually, having this meeting, and we're like, well, this Officer Daniels guy seems to be getting some attention with video. What if we tried video? And it was kind of really new to Facebook. This is like early, like mid 2015, maybe. Like, all right, maybe we should try that. I don't remember. I think my first video had my oldest son-in-law in it. And I think it was like a cop captain. Like, I pretended to be a pilot and had my son-in-law in the back of the cop car or something like that. And 6-second Vine, that might have been the first one. And I just woke up the next morning and it had like gone insanely, like shared and all that stuff on Facebook and Vine. Both it hit on both of them. And so, which I don't think it was anything about me, honestly. I just think like a relatable content for law enforcement at that time, it was just primed for it. And I just got lucky. I was the one that swung the bat. That's it. You know what I'm saying? Like, there was no grand plan. I had no idea that that would happen. I didn't have any intention whatsoever of doing that. In fact, the first few videos all just like kept hitting one after the other. And it got to a point in early 2016 where I was like, I actually feel bad because now it's doing the opposite of what we wanted. What we wanted was to draw attention to this organization. That's all we were wanting to do. And now it's all about Mike. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how I felt. And I was like, so that's when I was like, I either need to stop doing this, or I need to make it separate. That way, like, I can point back to Humanizing the Badge, and the Humanizing the Badge content can be about what other cops are doing. I didn't want it to be the Mike show there. You know, I wanted to like highlight what other cops were doing, their experiences, their good things, not me. So I created the Mike the Cop thing like February of 2016, and then just kind of like kept it going from there.
Yeah, it's funny because the culture of policing at the time when you did this, you know, you said it, you swung the bat. So I want people to understand policing in general. One thing that us as cops, and this is a culture of policing, we don't do the job to brag. We don't do the job for attention. We don't do it like that. There are some cops out there that do it for all of those reasons, but sure, yeah. In general, and we had no voice ever. The right. Cops did not have a voice at that time. Like, if something bad happened, one cop does something bad and it ripples across all cops and we all feel it. However, nobody was standing up and talking for us at that time. So it wasn't that Mike the Cop came out and was like, you know, cops do right and they do this. No, it was a different look that nobody had shared, but cops weren't sharing anything to begin with at that mm-hmm. time. So when you did it, it was like, oh shit, there's a cop. Is he a real cop? One, that was probably the first question a lot of people like to ask. But two, like, holy shit, this cop's actually funny. Like, most cops, like, they look at us like, you know, faceless, you know, sure. robots, yeah. you know, and then here comes Mike and Officer Daniels, you know, coming across with humor, which to me is one of the best ways. It's my favorite way to go after anything.
Yeah.
I think it helps win over people more often than not. And whether they're making fun of you or they're laughing along with you, I'm okay with either one.
I've got my share of both, and I got people that hate me. Oh, yeah. Hate me to the core, so it's all right.
Yeah, yeah. I've had people get on, you should kill yourself, you should kill your kids, why do you do this, you're not helping change anything, da 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 da. And I'm like, man, if I listened to you, I'd just be right next to you trolling the next guy. That doesn't sound like fun. So, and I don't know about you, but I let the trolls be on my page.
I don't really, unless they get racist. Yeah, the only time I ever really block anybody is if someone, I mean, it's rare. I mean, it's like 99.99% of the time, their comment stays right where it's at. Only if they started like dropping a bunch of racial epithets and violent statements towards somebody, that kind of a thing, then I'm like, all right, I'll put the kibosh on that. But just for a differing opinion, I don't, whatever.
Yeah, I do this. I let them get on there, and then, you know, I always thank them for supporting a police page. And they're like, I'm not supporting a police page. I'm like, well,
like every comment helps me. Thanks.
Yeah, every time you engage, you unlock the algorithms for me to find somebody else that didn't know we existed. And they're like, no, I don't do that. And I'm like, the best part is you're a last word type of guy. And they all are. They are all last word people. And so I'll just type in something. I'll be like, last word. And then I'm like a little kid. I can't believe they let me carry a badge. It's funny. So the culture of policing when you started doing this was so different than what it is today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you were a catalyst, you and Officer Daniels. Baker, that's another one, right?
Yeah, yeah. Baker was another early guy, after us, and then deputies Hookem and Bookem, they were in there.
Okay, I don't know those guys. I'd have to see their face. I've probably seen it, just don't recognize them.
Yeah, they're out in San Diego and
Whale's vagina.
When in Rome. yeah, I mean there was a handful, 911 strong, Aram Cho, he was in there, and a lot of these early creators were all sort of like, we all showed up and did humanizing the badge events, and it was like there was, because there wasn't that many of us. And so we were kind of like all together, and kind of, we were at Police Week together, and we were doing different, you know, we were going around the country doing different events and things like that. It was a fun season. And I look back on it, you know, happily. We had good times. I mean, it was only for a season, but I'm grateful for it.
Man, you guys killed it. I can tell you that. Because when people will say, oh, are you trying to do, you trying to be like Mike the Cop? I mean, that's a statement that people will give to me all the time. You're trying to be like Mike the Cop. And I'm like, a little, I'm trying. Like, I think you did a lot of good stuff. So as you got going with this and you guys started to mold a mission statement and all that stuff, what were some of the things that you were able to accomplish through Mike the Cop while still being a cop? Like, what was the fallout at work? I got too many questions. I'll let you do one at a time. So,
as far as accomplishments go, I mean, we were able to raise a ton of money for different individuals, whether that was officers in need or officers' families in need, causes in connection with Relentless Defender, which I'm still on the board for Relentless Defender Foundation. If you haven't heard of Relentless Defender Apparel, they're pretty much cool, kind of like the premier law enforcement apparel brand, you know. They're OG too with that stuff. But all the way up to there were some Facebook groups I was a part of that I had a hand in. I didn't start them per se, but that and the efforts that came from like my audience. There's a girl down in Texas, Hallie, and she had Hallie's Heroes. And so she had, I always blackfin something anemia. There's a name for it, and a certain type of cancer that resulted. And so she needed a particular donor, and it was a very intense procedure to get whatever they needed to transfuse to her and all this stuff. And we were able to use our platform. We found a donor that ultimately saved her life. And now she's gone through so much, but like, that's just one example of, we used a platform that had attention as cops to do something good for another human. You know what I'm saying? So it was like that's just one example of the many different cool things that we were able to see transpire as a result of this weird thing called the internet.
So I'm glad you mentioned Hallie's Heroes, because I was a part of that. I didn't get to meet any of you guys at that time, but we did the pink video where it was the firefighters and the police.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And Brandy, our mutual friend, Officer Brandy, for those wondering, she got a hold of me and was like, hey, you want to help out with this? I was like, yeah, absolutely. Let's go. And I did I dressed up as Time for the Alice in Wonderland portion.
Nice.
So the director, producer guy, Chris Hatchett, I don't know if you remember him or if you met him.
Mm-mm.
I never seen any of that Hollywood stuff before. And so it was kind of neat to be, you know, air quotes, an actor and see the whole process and all that stuff. A lot of hurry up and wait, you know, much like the military. So
right.
I'm going through it. And I said, the only thing I want out of this now that I'm a professional actor is my own IMDb. And so Chris, I didn't know how you got that, but Chris, the director, he went and made it for me. He made me an IMDb for that role. It was
most known for. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And it was all of, like, when you watch the video, I'm in it for like a half a second, maybe 2 seconds at the most. And I don't even talk.
Good enough. You get your SAG card.
Yeah. But Hallie did get a match. She did get cured from her issues. She had a whole nother set of issues, a poor girl.
Yeah.
Now she's got her robot leg and she's kicking ass, taking names. I keep in contact with them and in their Facebook group and stuff for Hallie's Heroes. If anybody's interested, you can check her out. but yeah, that I didn't realize you guys were a part of that. I guess.
We did an event in Fort Worth and Brandy had introduced us to her. Then we had like a hangout barbecue event at a park, and we met her then, and we instantly that evening knew, like, we all sat together and was like, we got to do something. There's no way we can't meet this girl and do nothing. So
so she's great.
And by all means, I hope that people listening don't think that I'm taking credit for saving a life.
Right.
It's just an example of what we were able to be a part of. Like, it certainly wasn't like a be all end all because of me, for sure. Yeah. But even us, it wasn't just us. There's a lot of folks involved, obviously.
Yeah. And it wasn't, you're helping community. You're not helping, you know, you didn't go help a PD necessarily. Not that that's a bad thing, but you're doing exactly what your mission is, which is humanizing the badge through community relations and getting people to have conversations with cops, which we weren't having at all. And I think things like Humanize the Badge and some of the other people you mentioned, kind of what I'm trying to do is just facilitate real conversations and not propaganda, whatever you want to call it, or we're just placating to those that already like us anyway.
Yeah.
I want the ones that, you know, either are on the fence or just don't like us because they never sat down and had a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've had other police officers like, what, you're going to get 1 out of 100 that are willing to do that? And I was like, okay, somebody's got to try. Mm-hmm. Why not be me? I think I don't come across as the person that tries to be confrontational. Just more or less like, let me hear your side. Let me try to give you my side of it from my experience and my perspective, or any of these other people that I've had on here that may know a little bit more, I can get you in touch with. So And then have the conversation from there. But if they're willing to come to the table and have a talk, that's all I can ask for.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's cool, man. I'm glad you called out Relentless Defender. They actually made a shirt, the cancer one for kids,
mm-hmm.
That I bought and I posted on the page. I go to their page all the time. I did not realize that they were purely law enforcement. Is that a law enforcement ran group?
Relentless Defender?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the owners
I thought it was military. Honestly.
No, yeah, no. I mean, they have like a patriotic line, and I'm, you know, at different times people who have been at high levels of the company have military experience and all that stuff, but like, yeah, it's primarily a law enforcement, you know, tip of the spear.
I gotcha. And that is I'm just showing for those that are listening, I'm showing the page right now so you can see their symbol and stuff and maybe like, oh yeah, I know that logo. Is it Aaron Slater?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's his name. Yeah. Man, my memory is kicking ass lately. It's all that alpha brain.
There you go.
But yeah, I got the page up right now. Go check those guys out. They do have really cool stuff. And like I said, I actually have a few of their shirts. Not today, though. Today, sport and retro rifle.
There you go.
Anytime you give me a Hawaiian shirt where you hide guns on there, I'm in. So
there you go. I like it.
Texas, baby. Okay, so as you get going through Mike the Cop, and you said you went through a season. I like the way you described that. So you get starts winding down. Like, what was the department saying as you were going? Like, were they pissed? Were they...
No, I was pretty blessed, honestly. But I think what helped is that, like I said, I started writing in 2014. And I didn't make my first video until, you know, fall of 2015.
Okay.
So a year and a half of time. And in that time, Humanizing the Batch had kind of come to be. And we were already doing good things. And so I think that by the time that it came to a point where I was like, oh, I'll try this video thing, both the officers that were around me and certainly my admin, which I was blessed with a pretty doggone good admin when I got hired, especially the top guy. And so they had already kind of seen what my motivation was, I think. I think that helped. It wasn't like, oh, you know, I didn't come in one day and knock on admin's door to like, hey, I want to make videos on the internet. You know, it wasn't like that. So right. They had already seen me just being me, I guess, you know, like, and quite honestly, like what you see on my videos, it's just me. I'm not like an actor, really. I just portray myself. It's like based on true life experiences.
Yeah.
So by the time it came to this idea of doing some videos, it was an easy ask and it was a fast yes. Like, yeah, sure. Just, you know, keep in mind you can't name the department and you have to paint policing in a good light. I think that was like pretty much that was the internet policy at the time. Was, you know, no identification of the department, and what you do communicate has to be positive.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, cool. So I got a green light and I started making videos and not a little bit into it. I'm sure that there were guys that talked behind my back or didn't care for my stuff or me or whatever. Nobody ever said that to my face, but everything seemed to be going well. And then the public safety director stopped me in the hallway. He's like, hey, I saw one of your videos. And I was like, oh boy, here it goes. And he had said that his kids were in the kitchen and they were laughing at something. And so he's like, hey, what are you laughing at? They're like, look at this cop, this video. And he's like, hey, that guy works for me.
I know this dude.
And he just said like, listen, if you as a cop in this climate are getting my kids to engage with your content, keep it up.
Yeah, like no brainer,
whatever. And I did, like, that's how a lot of times, like I would stop by schools in the morning and just to kind of keep fresh on what trends were and like learn, because I literally wasn't like an internet guru, you know?
Yeah.
So the kids kept me young, and I had young kids at the time, like on social media too. So I had a little bit of an edge there.
Nice.
But yeah, I mean, as far as work goes, it was good. And then there was an admin change. And so kind of it was, the writing was on the wall that there were some people, City Hall and elsewhere, weren't my biggest fans. So it was kind of like a little bit weird at the end, but it never came to a point to where they asked me to change anything or stop anything or whatever else. 'Cause I don't think they could, because I had been given the green light and I had obeyed the rules basically, you know, like I didn't step out of the boundaries of that. So it wasn't that big of a deal.
And the rules haven't really changed much. Yeah. I mean, even for me, I you know, I'm lucky that I can pick up the phone and call my chief, even being at a very large department. And we have the type of friendship where I was like, hey, this is kind of a thing I want to do. It's an expansion from my master's thesis. And I just kind of want to see how it goes. You know, it was COVID time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I wasn't working any part times. I had a lot of downtime I wasn't used to having. And it was an idea of mine that I kind of wanted to do. So same parameters, just don't, you know what the general orders are. Don't make the department look bad. Don't show, you know, don't name the department, because we're not, you know, they're not associated with the content that I put out.
Right. Like, we had, I actually like started going live on, it was called Periscope. I think Twitter ended up buying it.
Yep.
And people were going live doing different stuff. And so what we would do is our shift started at 7, and almost always I started work for overtime. I came in at 3. So by the time 3 in the morning came around, 2:30, 3 in the morning, things start to slow down. And you stack your reports because you're too busy to write in between. And we had 2-man cars like on midnights. We would shift who would write reports, but one would drive, one would write, you know, that's how we would work it. And I just happened to have a partner for a while, for a long season, where he didn't like to drive and I didn't want to write. So it was like, that was just kind of the arrangement. So we got into a pretty good rhythm of that. And I would just put the camera in the middle of the car and go live. And I would just talk to people on Periscope about what our night was, what our calls were, while he's like chunking out the reports, you know? You and go. If we had to go in another call, we did. But my boss, my road boss, like was watching live one night, and he was like, hey, you know, like, and this was like really early on. He's like, even though you're sitting there and you're available or whatever else, I would recommend just only going live if you're punched out on, you know, we had 2 technical, you know, breaks and a 1 technical lunch.
Right.
He's like, I would just tag out for, and honestly, none of us ever really did that. We didn't tag out. We might, like, if we were out at a restaurant, we were out of the car, we might say, you know, tag out on the system as out at wherever, so people knew what where we were at.
Right. But and if a call came, you'd go anyway.
The time wasn't ever tracked, you know what I'm saying? Like, because we were usually busy, so it didn't, like, didn't matter anyway. And that turned out to be great advice, right? So I was really early on. I was like, so I never got hemmed up, like, using public dollars to make my videos or whatever else. I never got that, because I avoided it with good advice from my sergeant. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I avoided all that shit because you guys, you know, laid the path for me. So I got lucky with that. I was able to do my research and see, and I did. I looked up, like, you know, what cops have been fired from the internet, that, you know, or from being on the internet and stuff like that. And then I, you know, you and I started talking a little bit offline about the cops that we see now on social media. You know, me, I'm a late bloomer, I guess, compared to you, for sure. You know, you're 2015. I didn't start till 2021.
Yeah.
2020. Yeah. Yeah. 2021 is when I started. Way late to the game. But I see all these other cops. My big thing I was trying to do was avoid being the same thing as everybody else. I just wanted to do something different. And I'm looking on there, and there's no cops that I could see that were trying to educate. They weren't trying to teach, at least at the time, for the stuff that I was thinking of. Now, there are guys like street cops. They do that. 911 Strong, he kind of does that too, mm-hmm. In a different way. But so I was like, all right, cool. I didn't find anybody that was doing the same thing I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But then I went down that path and saw what some of these cops are out there doing now. And holy shit. Like, I don't know how they survive roll call. How do you survive? I don't know how your roll calls were, Mike, but mine, I'm old school. I'm still this way. I will roast you the moment I have something to roast you.
Those are the best kind of roll calls, man.
Yes. If you are not quick with your wit in my roll calls, you're going to get destroyed. And I see some of these videos, and that's what I started to do. I realized me just doing the podcast in itself and putting clips out of the podcast, it wasn't getting the traction I was hoping it would get. It was working. Mm-hmm. It was just really, really slow. So I had a friend suggest, he's like, dude, you do funny shit. Like, I'd make little videos and stuff all the time and send them to friends and just like, you know, like a meme. And they're like, you should put that on your page. And then it will supplement, like it'll get more people to start queuing in. I was like, all right, let me try that. So holy crap. I started in July of last year doing reels,
mm-hmm.
and adding my sense of humor to stuff. And one of the things I would do, I found out I was kind of stealing anti-TikTok cop 2.0's thunder. I didn't know they did this, but they make fun of these cops putting out these thirst trap videos.
Right.
I think that's really what they are. They're, you know, they're young single cops, and they're trying to, I don't know. I don't want to put words in their mouth.
I don't know either.
I see it, and I'm like, all right, how is this helping community relations?
We always said, like, especially on the female side of things, it's like more like humanizing the vag, you know, like this is like, it's all sexual. It's not, it has nothing to do with policing or like even really humor. It's just like, what are you doing? You
right.
Know? Why did you make this video?
Oh, it's the best word for it is it's cringy. And yeah. I don't know how they do it, but yeah, if anybody's listening to this, check out the anti-TikTok cop 2.0, I think that's
yeah,
what it is.
Yeah.
Check those guys out. Mike and I occasionally chime in and say a few words of our own. And I told the TikTok, you know, the anti-TikTok cop guys, like, hey, man, mess me up. If I do something dumb, I'll leave it because you got to learn from your mistakes. Just know that's not my intention. And they're like, nah, man, we checked your stuff out. Some's on the edge, but we haven't found anything yet. I was like, all right, cool. I'll out myself right now. There was one, this girl, she gets on and she's trying to basically, you know, demasculate people and talk down. She's just talking down. And I believe she was a cop or something. And she's showing her chest off, like up close to the camera. And I'm like, nobody's even focusing on what you're saying. And so I was like, I probably had a couple of whiskeys, I'm not gonna lie. So I grabbed my outer carrier, mm-hmm. and I took my shirt off, and I just had the undercarrier on, and I put all of my cop related stuff out in front of me on the couch and just basically mimicked exactly what she did. And I got to the office the next day, and somebody had zoomed in, blown up me just shirtless with my thing. I was like,
yeah,
all right, I deserve that. That was not exactly the direction I wanted to go with that, but okay, cool. So that picture shows up occasionally now.
There you go.
No matter where I go. And I deserve it, so is what it is. But okay, so you do the Mike the Cop stuff, you get through that. Apparently you were supported and you got out just in time. So that's cool. And then did police work stop right then too? Did you stop being a cop right then?
I went from full time. I took a job, basically a marketing gig with a startup company is what I did. So, and then in the background of that, I continued to sort of like grow the Mike the Cop brand. Was still growing at that time and just did that alongside my new gig. And then I also got my real estate license in that time.
Okay.
That's when that happened. And I still stayed a cop. I was still doing part-time work. I mean, I think I had a couple months, you know, off, you know, where I left full-time, took a couple months off, got acclimated to the new job, and then went ahead and got a, you know, got into the process. Because it still took, like, you know, time to go through another background and all that stuff to get the next job.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I was just kind of like the low man on the totem pole, filling in for shifts or pretty much like weekend midnights was like what I was doing. So I was like, you know, I kind of had come along enough to be a day shift guy at that point. But I was like, whatever, you know, it was tiny, tiny department, like whatever. So it was, I mean, it was just me on the road, your neighboring towns were your backup. So it's like, yeah, I was up in Northern Oakland County.
Screw that.
It was fine though. I mean, it was a pretty quiet community, so it was just, you know, I could get into stuff if I wanted to in and out of Pontiac, but I didn't. I didn't necessarily want to dig at that point. So I still stayed in policing for another 3 years. I finally got a part time gig closer to home, into like in 2019. Into 2020, into when all the COVID madness was happening.
Okay. So now with police work, some cities you can work, like call it moonlighting, part times, whatever you want to call it. You can work these off duty gigs where I'm at, you can work at Walmart as helping with loss prevention. You can work, and you are a uniform cop. You are wearing your full uniform and all of this stuff. You can work bars. So it's kind of cool. I like the premise here, what we do, because basically the citizens are getting a cop for free because if something goes down around them, they're obligated to act. And they're also helping squash calls before they become an actual call because there's an officer on scene. So I'm a big fan of that. However, not all departments do that.
Correct.
And cops don't make the best money depending on the city state that they're in. So finding some sort of supplemental income that can be passive or whatever that you can do in your downtime is, I think, something that cops do not take advantage of enough.
I agree.
They see a lot of them get ate up with police work, which is fine. If that's your thing and you know, they eat, breathe, sleep, cop work, and you want to, you know, go volunteer your time to go work with NARC or, you know, SWAT, Vice, whatever it is, because that's where you're trying to go and you're just making city overtime or working for comp time, that's great. However, police work is very fickle and you are one injury away. You are one cell phone video from a bad angle away from losing this job, especially if you're a street cop. So real estate is my brother-in-law. He was a homicide detective in Clearwater. And that's what got him out of police work. He was a cop in Birch Run, then Saginaw Township in Michigan.
Yeah.
And then I actually think he was in, So anyway, those two. And then he transferred down to Clearwater, Florida, and did homicide down there for a while. But it was real estate that got him out. And I have several officers that I work with, former sergeant, stuff like that, that's what they do as well. They are doing real estate. So police work and real estate seem to go hand in hand across the nation, because who knows cities better than cops?
True.
I mean, you can tell people where to avoid. Assuming you're from the area, you're going to have cop friends. So you can be like, hey, I'm looking at some properties over here. What do you guys know? And you've got the inside scoop, baby. So
right. Yeah.
that's the route that you took after your police work. So I want to get into that. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Peregrine's data integration platform is revolutionizing the way law enforcement agencies engage with their data, making it easily accessible and immediately actionable for those who need it when they need it most. When you're in leadership, investigations, analysis, patrol, or dispatch, Peregrine makes it easy for you to ask questions of your data, get quick answers, and make informed decisions. Law enforcement agencies across the U.S. are leveraging Peregrine to unify and maximize their data to improve decision-making, optimize workforce efficiency, and keep officers and their communities safe. If you're ready to start making better, faster decisions by leveraging your department's data, then visit Peregrine.io. That's Peregrine.io. And tell them Two Cops, One Donut sent you.
Yeah. I had a buddy of mine, Chris Fisher, and he had told me forever. He had an injury when he was making a lateral from Alabama. He's a SWAT dude, going from 12 years there, and he was going to lateral to Mesa, I think it was. And then his last week on the job, he tore the tendons in his right hand, fighting a guy. And that was the end of his police career. And so he found himself in a new state because he had gotten married. And so he found himself in a new state, only knowing her and her family members. Like, that was it. So he had to figure something out. So he did the real estate thing. And once he got going on it, he's like, man, you got to do this because, you know, we're built for this. Like, the skills we learn as cops translate so well to this. Like, it's easy. And I was like, I don't know, you know, because I'm not really, I'm not a big salesy guy, you know, like a traditional salesman or something. I didn't think I was or feel like I was, you know. So I was like, all right, I'll do the classes. So I did it when I was traveling, because that marketing gig that I got was Tampa based. So I had to fly down every like 6 weeks or so, and I was there for a few days to come back home. And, you know, most of it was remote, but I had to go down there sometimes. And so I said, when I'm on the plane, I'll do the courses. So it took me a while, and I did it, took the test, started it, and I actually hated it. I went into this like boutique brokerage, and it was all a bunch of salesy douchebags wanting Lamborghinis and making sales calls. And I was like, this is freaking gay, dude. I'm like, I'm not doing this. This is stupid. I was like, Chris, what's wrong with you? Did you smoke crack before you told me I should do this? You're an idiot. And so I like literally parked my license, and then a Flint cop actually got his broker license and said, just hang it with me. You know, like, you can do whatever you want, like, whatever, no pressure. So I did. And then ended up helping a cop and his soon-to-be wife, who worked in HR at like a county department. And so that was an awesome experience. And I was like, oh, okay, now I see what you're talking about. If you do this the right way, if you don't do it the traditional douchey sales way, and you do just treat this like you're a cop, but in this environment, this actually is fun and is relatively easy to help people. And so then I was hooked on that and wanted to get better and learn that. So we kind of each were doing that and got better. And then before you know it, I was like, well, I can never go back to policing because I'd have to take a 50% pay cut to go back. And I didn't make good money as a cop. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of where it was. And then we were sitting around drinking bourbon one night. It was like, we can't be the only two idiot cops that can do this.
Right.
Like, maybe we could help others do this. And then we kind of figured out a way with, there's a lot of red tape sort of things we could talk about that would bore people to tears. But long story short, the 10-7 project was born in the fall of 2020. And the whole concept is that we want to help 10,000 cops, veterans, and public safety professionals change their lives, you know, like supplement or replace their income. We've got people that have come on with us that all they want to do is 3 or 5 deals a year and say no to overtime. You know, we've got others that they just want to take their family on better vacations without stress. You know, they don't have to kill themselves in a uniform to do it. And then we've got other folks who they're looking at retirement in the next 3 to 5 years. They're just getting a new skill and being ready so that they don't have to do a security gig. And then we've got other folks who have quadrupled their income and quit their cop job and living their best lives now, you know, like,
damn.
So it runs the gambit of kind of like what we're doing, but we have over 200 agents now across the country, and we're growing. We're doing obviously the real estate stuff. I've added in mortgages now and handling a lot of the lending for the agents in the project. And we're setting up new programs for cops and veterans when it comes to treating them right in the home buying and in the lending process. And yeah, so it's really opened up a lot for us, and it's been a huge challenge. You know, I, even though I've been a side hustle guy, this is like business on another scale for me. So like, I'm learning. It's a huge challenge, but I love it. Like I said, I need a change and I need challenge to keep me going, to keep me interested. And this is providing that for us for sure.
Excellent. For those listening only, I've got the 107 Project website up. It is 10 spelled out T-E-N, the number 7 project.com. So 107 project.com. Make sure you guys go check that out, especially it, so Mike, if a cop is interested in doing this, looks like they're like, you know, I've always wanted to kind of do real estate.
Mm-hmm.
What should my first step be?
If you just go to 107project.com, so it's T-E-N, the number 7 project.com. And then just like, you can register there basically. And then you'll get into our launch group and you can explore. You know, maybe it's not a fit for you. Maybe it is, you know, but we have a launch group. We've got like 4,000 people in there and you can ask questions because of course people think, well, of course you say this is awesome. So like, I mean, ask other people who've been doing it, you know, like, you know, they're not robots. You can get in there, watch the videos, ask questions, get your, you know, get a feel, for whether or not you think it would be a fit. And if it is, great. If it's not, you know, we're happy to hopefully encourage you on your journey, whatever that's going to be.
And from what I'm reading, you guys have a podcast on it as well. So they could probably sit back, listen, and hear some of the stuff you guys have to say before they ever.
Yeah, some of that stuff is still there. We don't do that podcast anymore, but I mean, the content is still there. The podcast content for what we did for a little under a year, just to get out some content that we wanted to have out there.
Okay. Very cool. Awesome, man. How is the project going?
It's great, man. It's great. Yeah. We no complaints. We're growing week over week. We grow and, yeah, I'm loving it. It's a whole new level of excitement when you can see somebody's life change in front of you, you know, like going from struggling financially to, you know, having resources. We got one guy in Alabama, man, he's in just, I think he's been doing this like less than 4 years, and he's gone from, I think they were like 60,000 in debt on top of their house. And now he's completely debt free, including the house and, you know, damn, in the black, and he's still doing policing, I think. So it's like, there's so many cool stories of people whose lives have been changed by just taking a chance on themselves, you know, using their skills just in a different way, you know, because time for dollars, it can be a good thing. I mean, it's a big responsibility to help someone with their biggest financial asset, generally speaking. So, but we're built for that. That's exactly that skill, right? Like, we're built to help people in the most biggest tense moments of their lives.
Right.
Just, so we're good. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're okay. We can do that. We don't have to, we can do it, and we can be calm about it. We can be comforting to people. We can help assure them. We got all those skills, you know. We can talk about things that we have no business knowing about their lives. Like, this is like a day in the life of a cop. And here we are, we get to do it with clients. And once you can make that shift in your head that you're like, I'm just literally doing the same job, I'm just doing it in a different vertical, a different niche or environment, then, you know, you can really unlock some success.
That's awesome. I want to kind of switch gears a little bit. This is the last thing that I wanted to bring up with you. And then we can, if you got anything on your mind that you wanted to bring up as well, we could do that as well. I just said as well, like 8 times. So that's awesome. I'm going to leave that in. Anyway, jiu-jitsu, sir.
Yes.
You're a roller.
I indeed am.
I like it. What level are you currently?
I'm a brown belt.
Oh, shit. Now it's just time and reps, baby.
Yep, we're working on it. My training's been slack in the last couple of months. I've been so busy in the evenings, and my normal MO has shifted. So I actually kicked off the new year. I just started a day class. So 7 a.m., I'm just said, I'm just going to teach it. And whoever shows up, that way I can get some reps in, get some roles in.
Yeah.
Let's just grow this thing so that I can get it done in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it was awesome today because I was home, cleaned up, breakfast. I was like ready to go by 9 this morning. And I was like, man, it feels so good to have that done out of the way.
Right.
And because it's like, it's so easy when things come up in the evening, business wise or family wise, to be like, man, you know, I worked all day. Like, it's like the thought of trying to get to jiu-jitsu now and all that stuff and lose my whole evening, basically come home and go to bed. You know, it's not, I'm not saying you can't do it because I did it for years, but you know, it's easier to get it done in the morning if you can.
Right. And plus the same allure is not there that it is when it's new and you're learning. And, you know, it's not that you're not learning as a brown belt by any means, but you do. I think once you get to that purple belt stage and you're really figuring out your game and what works for you, what doesn't work for you, you've got the job knowledge base as a purple belt. And then, man, yeah, you do. You hit that brown belt and I can see it. Like you said, we like change. And there's not a whole lot of new change once you get to that level.
Yeah.
There's no huge breakthroughs anymore.
yeah, it's the devil gets in very much in the details, little shifts.
Yes, yes.
And it's like, I've seen that, just a little bit different. It's like, this is a little tweak, this little thing here, yeah.
Yeah, and you're watching, you know, Donaher videos left and right.
I can't do Donaher, dude. I can't do it.
Takes forever. Like,
you just told me 3 hours of stuff to say I should do an armbar, man. I can't do it. I can't do it. Guy's a genius, but I can't do it.
I like when he takes the time to do a video of the move with practical application versus his descriptor that goes into the move. If you can get away from that and just, like, he showed a rear naked choke the other day, video I saw, and it was only 2 minutes long. So I was like, okay, I'm in.
Oh, nice.
That I can do. He can go forever. So I'm sitting there watching, and he did. He gave this one little detail about trapping your rear, you know, the arm that goes behind the head with your chin in a certain way. And I'm like, oh, I never considered that. I guess, yeah, that would take off a little bit more stress. So, yeah, it is. It's in the little details, and everybody's got their own little perspective on what works for them. And it just takes time to run across mm-hmm. it or figure it out for yourself.
Yeah.
And you can only get that through reps. But in police work, sir, in police work, as a person that's done jiu-jitsu, that's been in and out of police work now, what is your opinion on the hierarchy of police training for something like grappling? Where should that fall?
Number one.
I'm only more surprised that you said number one, because most people would say, you know, number three, number four, you know, behind firearms training and, you know,
no,
community police relations.
I'm not saying I would police without a firearm because that would be dumb, but my proficiency, I don't want to make it an either or, because that's not real. It's not an either or, but I'm going to put hands on someone and need to control them infinitely more times than I will ever have to use my firearm. So this, and what I see in policing, what I saw in policing and what I continue to see in policing is a lack of emphasis on the need to maintain at least as sharp of an ability in subject control as they do in firearms. Now, a lot of departments, you know, their firearms program is lacking as well. But yeah, I mean, when I first started my first department, we did like Krav Maga as like our DT stuff. And it's like, listen, man, am I really grabbing somebody's Adam's apple and clawing their eyeballs out when I'm like, what the fuck are we doing here? Like, this is, I'm like, this is not very practical. Like, I get it. Like, if my life is in danger, of course I'll bite someone's ear off if it's me or them. Like, this is not the question. The question is, like, in most combative circumstances, how can I be as efficient as possible and as safe as possible for everyone involved to to get this situation under control, like, and get a person under control. That's like, and we don't think about that. And the problem with police training is there is a level of consistency in the academy, because by default you're there every day. So you're working on these things in a sequence and in a rhythm over that time period, you know, whether that's, you know, 4 to 8 months, depending on where you're at or what's going on. But the problem with, you know, shooting is a perishable skill as well. But like shooting, so is defensive tactics, so is subject control. You don't go to 1 8-hour class even every quarter, right? Like, even if, and this is, it's unheard of for most departments to have defensive tactics training once a quarter. But if they did, that's still not enough. Your body doesn't know how to do that under stress, like, repeatedly. And that's the advantage of ongoing jiu-jitsu training, is there's very, very few disciplines. And I know that guys will talk about boxing, which is a great skill to have, but most of the time you will not be punching people you're trying to put in handcuffs. Most of the time, that is not a directly applicable skill. It's an ancillary skill. However, grappling is 100% applicable to your normal subject control situation in the policing environment. And it is something that can be trained at 100% effort with very little risk to injury for the intensity at which you can train. So yes, there should be. And there's really no excuse to not have a curriculum. I'm a huge fan of effective fitness combatives. And I've been exposed to everything. So I'm a huge fan of their curriculum and their principles. And there's no reason that departments can't adopt that and then regularly, like, call guys in off the road for 15 minutes. Like, hey, we're going to rep out this one thing, like, pushed up against a wall or whatever. Like, we're in an enclosed situation. This is sort of like the scenario we're doing. Let's rep this out. And they get 20, 30 reps in and then go back to the road and, like, cycle through that, or have a regular opportunity on a cycle to train these guys. So, yeah. So on Friday mornings, for example, at our academy, I run an effective fitness combatives curriculum. It's free. Any area cop can come, and we go through a 6-month cycle and build on the skills as they come. So I think it's super important.
I'm glad that you said that, because I've been a proponent for jiu-jitsu since 06. Basically, when I got into law enforcement, I got lucky and happened to have a jiu-jitsu gym near me. I've always been in martial arts somewhat. Judo, when I was real young, it was, what's that, karate? Shotokan, which is, It was bullshit, but it was something. And, you know, wrestling and things of that nature. But jiu-jitsu is hands down. I loved judo, don't get me wrong. I thought that was fun. But jiu-jitsu has hands down been the... I attribute my success as a cop behind my jiu-jitsu training. That is why it's a major portion of why I was successful as a cop.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not just that you can fight. It's that you can defend yourself or take somebody in control without hurting them. That's a big thing, you know, doing it without being able to hurt somebody. And then the other thing is the level of confidence that you have, and you stop becoming so dependent on your Batman belt.
Yeah.
It jiu-jitsu, as you get going, you will start to learn this level of confidence that you don't even see in yourself. You don't know it's happening, but it is happening, because you are getting closer. You're a presence. You present yourself differently. It's like the state trooper that's got that crisp uniform and they're 6'4" and they're huge. You know, there's an intimidation factor with those guys. Jiu-jitsu does the same thing, in a different way. And people, they'll ask me, you know, like, oh, you do the jiu-jitsu stuff and whatnot. Like, you probably do it all the time at work. I'm like, no, actually, I don't. I hardly ever use it.
Right.
And I couldn't explain it myself. Why do I not? And it took years for me to look back and, like, You know what it is? I've seen some of these kids that come up after me, and I'm like, they listened to my advice or somebody else's advice, and they trained in jiu-jitsu, and I see the difference in them, in their police work. It's mm-hmm. that presence that they learned through jiu-jitsu. And
yeah.
I think it should be mandatory blue belt minimum. Departments should be paying for their officers to go. There should be some sort of roll call thing where, you know, you check in on an app or whatever. Hey, I'm at school and your instructor checks off. I don't know how to do it because cops are like little kids on that stuff.
Yeah, somebody in Michigan tried to actually make a law adding this into cops need to have their blue belt or equivalent. The problem is who gets to decide what that is,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, like, you get a McDojo belt, you're...
Yeah, it's like, is it just they showed up, you know, right. or can they demonstrate these things? And if they can demonstrate that, who's judging the demonstration of that ability? So it gets a little hazy.
Yeah,
I do agree that they should have reputable things. And that's why, like, a company, and full disclosure, I'm not paid by Effective Fitness Combatives. They're not paying me to say this. I get paid yeah. nothing. So what I love about their curriculum is there's literally a syllabus. There's the principles, there's case law, there's report writing. There's the body of those principles is explained. And then there's a sequence of scenarios and techniques that are appropriate for that. That are court defensible, and you know, in each state that they go to, they get compliance with that state's, you know, governing law enforcement bodies. So
okay.
here it's MCOLS, TCOL, I think is what it is in Texas or whatever. Same thing everywhere.
Yeah.
So getting that locked in, and that way there's actually a standard. Like you can go to. You know, guys that come to my class, for example, they don't get a certificate. They're learning good stuff, but there's no certificate. If they want that, they can actually go to, when they come into town, they can go pay or their department pay for an actual user certificate, and they do not pass everybody, right? Like, you actually have to really demonstrate that you know these things and can apply them in a weapons-based environment. And that's what we need. We need a standard, you know?
Yes.
And that's why I love what they're doing. Because they're raising the standard and setting a higher standard in that space for subject control.
Yeah. I'm lucky at my department. We have, every Tuesdays and Thursdays, I think at 11, there's a couple black belts. They're officers, and they, mm-hmm. they just, whatever you want to work on, come up. We'll talk, you know, it's not like a sanctioned class. Like, today we're working on this necessarily, but it's all departmental. You know, I think we do GST
mm-hmm.
is kind of our go-to, but we also create our own control tactics manual.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've done is kind of adopted some of the things that we'd like from GST, Gracie Survival Tactics, for anybody wondering what I'm talking about. Another great program. I have not heard of the EF Combatives, Effective Combatives. So I'm going to check those guys out, see if I can't get them brought down to my academy. And just
they've got a Michigan takeover. We first got them over in the Grand Rapids area following a shooting there. And then, we've got a really good growing amount of cops training in Michigan. We've got regular police open mats monthly that go around the state, and a lot of cool relationships, good network, and it's encouraging to see a lot more cops training, for sure.
Yeah.
It's good. It should be the normal. It 100% should be.
I agree.
But it is good to see cops taking their time out of their own day, their own schedule, to come and invest in themselves, even though their department may not be investing in
yeah.
them.
And that's the hard part. One, cops have egos. I've noticed a lot of cops, they just don't like being dominated. And let's face it, if you're at any reputable jiu-jitsu place, you're dominated. Like, the whole first 6 months, at least. It's mm-hmm. just a nonstop beat down.
Well, unfortunately, that's the thing that keeps cops away, and the thing that will improve cops the most. It's a double-edged sword, right? Because
right.
a lot of cops, you know, I had good friends of mine, in shape dudes, you know, like, by all means, looking at them in uniform, they're sharp. You know, they look good. They had a presence about them because, you know, well, they bench, you know, 285 for, you know, whatever, you know, they're strong, but they would come and yeah, you learn quickly that your knees only go in one direction, don't they? You know, yeah. It's like, so they get humbled really, really quick. And that's hard to take because, and part of it is the way the way that is drilled into us, right? Fight, win, go home. Like you got to be the police. You got to win. You know, that's the mentality you have to have, which is true, which is great. But if you can't back that up, then it can be a dangerous place to be physically. So, you get humbled like that. And it messes with your head because you're like, wait a second, I'm supposed to be the guy that could take this guy to jail. And I couldn't take this 150-pound kid to jail if I wanted to. And I mean, people think it's bragging or people think it's like, you know, okay, whatever. I'm like, listen, man, I've been in police academies where six people cannot put me in handcuffs.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not because I'm magical. It's I'm not even that good.
Yeah, you have basic principles.
There's a lot of people way better than me.
Yeah,
that might break the law. Yeah. And you're gonna have a real. Oh, I'll just shoot him. Okay, well, yeah, but that's not how life works. That's not right. How the law works. Like,
yeah, and like getting to your gun sometimes too.
You know, or getting to your gun, or relying on your taser and other secondary weapons that won't have an impact on somebody. You know, so it's like, you know, there's a lot of that kind of going around, and man. I could talk about, I could sing the praises of grappling training for a while. Yeah. And every time I talk about it, you know, there's always the dissenting voices, but those dissenting voices also typically never show up.
Yeah. I've made the argument, and people have gone against me on this, but I've made the argument that if you have use of force issues, that is single-handedly the one thing that will lower your use of force issues at your department. And people are like, well, that don't make any fight. You're going to teach them to fight, and that's going to lower use of force. Yeah, absolutely. It will absolutely lower it because they're going to be able to handle things and do things that don't involve a use of force in a traditional sense. They're going to be able to control an opponent versus having to fight an opponent where – if you don't do this stuff, it's hard to explain. I'm not the most articulate person, but you know, you box somebody, that's great. You got boxing training. But what do you always have when you do boxing training? Wrapped hands and boxing gloves.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever punched somebody? Have you ever punched the ground on accident?
Yeah. Then there's a miss. I'm not using the right word. Misunderstanding, I guess, is one part, but poor impression. Bad impression that, oh, well, you don't want to be on the ground. No, I don't want to be, but guess what? And what I was like, every use of force as a police officer is a ground use of force. Like, what are you talking about? I'm like, anytime that you are going to put someone in handcuffs that doesn't want to go into handcuffs, you will be on the ground. That ground may be vertical, called a wall. It may be a car. It may, but it's going to be a surface. It's going to be the ground.
Yeah.
And you have to learn to navigate that. And not, I did the statistic one time before, but it's like 90-some% of all use of forces on resisting subjects.
Yeah.
Right. It's going to be a ground entanglement. So yeah. No, of course not. I also don't want to have to fight somebody into handcuffs, but that's not reality. I'm going to have to do that at some point. And so am I going to be capable of that? And will I want to always increase my capability in that? Or do I want to be lackadaisical there? Do I want to be complacent there? You know, the choice is yours. It's like, yeah.
Every non-compliant arrest goes to the ground.
Correct.
I mean, it does. You're not handcuffing somebody that's standing up anymore.
Right.
Like they go to the ground. So if they are not complying, they're going to the ground.
And if someone wants to get in a boxing stance and wants to slug it out, okay, do I want to break my hand? Do I want to trade blows with somebody, or do I want to take it to the ground at that point to be in more control? Well, the answer is sort of. Yeah.
You get in a boxing stance. Like if I look and I'm like, all right, this guy's been trained. I'm tasing you.
Right.
I'm not trying to go grapple with somebody that's trained or get in there. Now, I'm hoping I'm not alone. Sometimes you are. So I want distance. Time and distance are my friend. But once I commit to going hands-on, then yes, I'm going to take your ass down to the ground and you're going to be humbled.
Yeah.
Very quickly. So I'm with you, Mike. Listen, man, I could keep going definitely on the jiu-jitsu side, but we're coming up on almost 2 hours. And do you have anything that we haven't hit on yet that you want to touch on?
No, man. Whatever you've wanted to touch on is happy by me.
I'm glad you like what I touched on for you, because you can touch on whatever you want to touch on as well, sir.
There you go. This is Two Cops After Dark.
Yeah. Two Cops and Mike's Donut. Right. What are you drinking on tonight?
This is a little bit of Four Roses.
Oh, Four Roses. Well done, sir. Good choice. I am going to be doing a little bit of Smoke Wagon. You are not my only podcast today, sir.
Yikes.
So I know.
Wow, boy, you're putting in the hours here.
Well, I work midnights now, and my regular podcasting schedule has been significantly impacted. So I'm trying to figure out a flow.
Do you stay on a midnight schedule?
Yes. I woke up at around 2:30 today.
Yeah, I tried both ways. For a season on midnights, I would stay up playing Call of Duty with my shift guys and something like that. You know, like,
yeah.
And I would go to bed a little bit earlier, like 4, you know. But it was hard because I mean I had 4 kids at home, so it was hard to maintain the midnight schedule. So I eventually relented and kind of sucked it up. I remember about a month after going on day shift, I was like, so this is what it's like to be awake. this is wild, man.
Like, hurts my eyes.
Wow, this is cool, man. Like I feel like a person. And yeah, my wife would be like, yeah, you don't know how many, you know, family meals we went to or holidays where you were just like in a corner like a zombie. Like,
yeah,
I'm like, dude, I lived for years on 3 or 4 hours sleep, man.
Yeah, you know, you have to get, like, that's why I do what I do. I commit to the schedule. I'm like, all right, I'm just, my sleep is now, I get my 8 hours no matter what. And my wife, she's a nurse. She's had to work the midnights. So she gets it now. She didn't for a long time. She didn't understand how just much it, if you don't keep that schedule, you don't fully commit to it. You do. You turn into an asshole too. I do. I'm grumpy. Like, I snap at every little thing. So I work out regularly. I make my diet a priority and I commit to the schedule.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's probably the smart thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It is what it is. Newly promoted. I'm happy for that. I'm glad. It's just, you gotta start from the bottom, and I'll get it. I'll be back to a day shift, I'm hoping, within a year. So we'll see. See how it goes.
Yeah.
But thanks, buddy. I appreciate you being on. Guys, make sure, I'm going to put it up on the screen again, 107project.com. Right there. I'll spell T-E-N, the number 7, project.com. Check that out. You guys, if you want, you can always go back old school. Check out Mike the Cop on YouTube and see his stuff. You still putting out content?
No, not really. I mean, I still stay active on Instagram, but I've been trying to fight to change my username with Meta for a year. They won't let me. Yeah. And they haven't let me. I think I posted this yesterday on social media, actually. It's been 4 years since they've allowed me to grow. 4 years ago, I had 326,000 followers. I have 318,000 today. It just drops consistently. Even though I reach 3 to 5 million accounts a month.
Yep. They do the same to me. At least they squashed you at a much larger number than mine.
Yeah. So they, and I would go on to Facebook, which now is even my personal Facebook gets more engagement than my 1.1 million followers. They completely squashed my Mike the Cop on Facebook, but I would go on there and say, hey, they're unfollowing people from my account without their knowledge in the interest of community safety. And so they would go, I would like see a 4,000 follower spike in 24 hours. The next 24 hours, I would lose like 4,028 followers. Like,
right.
What are they like? They would literally just like, oh no, he's over the threshold. We pull him back. So yep. I don't, I've seen it. I've lived it for 4 years, no matter what content I've done. And I've done plenty of content in the last 4 years that has gone viral, that has had millions of views and all that stuff. And it hasn't changed my follower count, one follower on Instagram or Facebook. Yep. So it's like, I'm kind of stuck. I've partnered in my YouTube channel with Law Enforcement Today now. If you guys know who that is. I've got a conversation series coming out where I sat down with some cops and smoked some cigars, drank some bourbon, just talked about the job. And that should be coming out on YouTube soon. So a little bit here and there. I mean, mostly, you know, I want to continue to make content, but my content is really focused around life and business after policing, you know, and I would like to, you know, I'll always forever be supporting law enforcement and investing back into that profession on some level. And I want to be a resource for, cops that do want to transition, because it's not a matter of when you're not going to be a cop anymore. It's a matter of when, right? So that's the thing for me, is if I can continue to make content that can still speak to cops today, still be pro, encourage them and support them, but also show them that there is life after policing, that you can start a business. You don't have to get a security gig afterwards. You can pursue other things. And I've been chewing on what to do, because I know that real estate isn't for everybody. Some people aren't going to be jazzed up to do that, you know, even though they might even be good at it. It's just not an interest to them. And that's, you know, I got to recognize that. So I've been chewing on ways that I could provide, I guess, training, as it were, on just business in general, like the life after policing business training pack, you know, like, yeah. here's how you need to understand the elements of what you're going to need to put a business together, whether it's a side hustle, you know, whether maybe, you know, you want to start a landscaping or a car detailing business on your side, you know, whatever it is, there's certain principles that go along the way that you need to think about no matter what the business is. And a lot of guys just feel intimidated by trying to kind of learn that stuff. And maybe I could break that down for them and create something around that to where I could help educate that. So these are the things that I'm thinking about for the future. Like I said, I've always got to get my hands in something new and new challenges. So we'll see.
Well, I need that because I've got this business here and I'm not a business guy. I don't know shit about business. I just like to do podcasts.
Me either, but I've learned. So.
All right, brother. Well, stay warm. Stay safe. Keep rolling. And I appreciate you doing the show for me, man.
Yeah, man. When if you ever come back up here or I get down there, let's connect and hit the
hell
mats.
Yeah, for sure. But all right, brother, just stick around real quick after I end this recording, and thanks again.
For sure.